One of the things that I think creating intimacy with ourselves does for others is that we become highly much more empathic and compassionate, right? So when you are working with somebody, whether you are a leader or, you know, whether you're not a leader, you are able to really feel into people and understand where they're coming from emotionally and mentally. And that enables you to converse and relate to them so much more clearly than when you aren't aware. You know, like how often people say, like, I'm not really sure what that person is thinking or where they're coming from, right? Or what their intention is. When you create more intimacy, you can really feel people's intentions and you can really feel what they're needing or and or what their intention is. So your ability to respond and or your ability to set more clear boundaries, maybe because that needs to happen. Again, clarity just really increases because now you have information that you didn't have before.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Business Therapy, the show that combines business expertise and mindfulness. Each week, Sam and I tackle common business problems and topics with a broad array of guests and share insights into practices that fuel growth and that enable you to be your personal best. This week, we have Alara Sage on the show. Hi, Alara.
Hi.
Alara is a coach and mentor who helps her clients shift from a performance mindset to a deep connection with themselves and magnetized intimate connections for pleasure and wealth. So, Alara, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the topic of going from a performance to a pleasure mindset.
Yes, thank you so much, John. And I'm so grateful to be here, and it's a delight to have two hosts. I got double duty here. It's wonderful. Thank you to both of you for having me. Yeah, so I work with primarily women, but really professional driven people who are ambitious. You know, they're driven. They've really accomplished a lot in their life. And they kind of like take a moment and they stop and they realize that they're unfulfilled. There's something missing in their life. They seemingly have it all, but they don't feel that way inside. And I really help them to reconnect to themselves very, very deeply and intimately, and to really connect to joy and to pleasure in their life. And so that then comes out into all the other aspects of their life and really changes them physically, emotionally, mentally, and of course, spiritually.
How did you get into this, Alara?
It's kind of a long story, but I started off working on horses, ironically enough, doing body work to horses. And I was taught by spiritual beings that showed up during those sessions, energy work. And next thing I knew, I opened a business as an animal communicator because all of a sudden I was very, very able to communicate with the animals. And then it just progressed into working with people. And really, you know, the type of work that I do, most of the time, we're really teaching from our own experiences. And for me, connection was one of those experiences that I woke up one time after being married for about 12 years and had that exact sensation where I was like, wait a second, I'm not fulfilled. I have a beautiful house. I have a loving husband who we get along very well. We're great partners, two beautiful children. Why do I feel this way? And it took a couple of years of exploration into myself to really find that key and to really go through that process. So for me, it's really that I walk the talk.
And we've covered this in many different ways. I always like to say it's good to get into some of these practices before the midlife crisis, if possible. What makes people reach out to you? What's like? Is there a common thread where people realize that they're unfulfilled, or a common point or patterns you see in terms of your clients coming to you?
I mean, people usually reach out to me because they see me or hear me somewhere and they're just drawn in and they just know that there's something going on and they need to work with me. But as soon as we have a conversation, it's immediate, you know, it's immediate that, again, there's just, you know, there's a light within us And there's when we really understand what fulfillment is, we can really live, you know, it sounds sometimes very euphoric, but it's a very bliss-lit life where we are really, really lit and, dare I say, orgasmic within our reality, within our physical experience. And you can really tell people that don't have that and kind of are just doing the do, right? They're taking the action, they're doing what they think they're supposed to be doing, but that light has been dimmed a bit.
Mm-hmm. And especially, I think it's a good segue when you use the term orgasmic and going into the conversation of pleasure. I guess start an intro about how this idea of pleasure plays into that euphoria or that end state that could be a normal way of living versus kind of maybe a more performance-driven or a stodgier way of living. I guess I'd love to start that conversation around definition of that you think when you talk about pleasure as a lifestyle.
Yeah, I love that question. To me, we're physical beings. You know, I'm a very, very etheric being. I spend a lot of time in meditation. I spend a lot of time in other spaces, but I'm really a physical being. And we're here in this physical world, and the physical world has sensation. And the beauty of that sensation is pleasure. You know, and one of the funny things is that we think that we have to kind of move through this physical reality in this heaviness and in this pain, quite frankly. Most people feel that's just the physical reality. It's painful, it hurts, it sucks, right? But if everything has two sides of a coin, and the other side of that coin is that orgasmic bliss, that pleasure. And so for me, and through my personal experience, I used to not experience pleasure. I remember one time I went out with my friends and I literally noticed, like, I don't enjoy anything. Like, I really don't find joy in any of this. Like, what happened to me? Because I'm a joyous person. And so coming again back to that, my journey back through that, I realized that we're really here to experience the fruit of the physical, which is pleasure. You know, it's the pleasure of the taste. It's the pleasure of the sensation. It's the pleasure visually, the pleasure audibly, the pleasure of all of our senses. And we've been quite the opposite. We've been in that pain and like kind of heaviness for a very long time.
Yeah. And I want to say I'm 100% supportive of this concept and I'm trying to practice it myself, but I want to say that piece first, because I think a lot of people, and I want to ask another question to probe deeper, a lot of people struggle, especially if they're from the camp that life is suffering, that they suffer with this idea of pleasure is selfish and pleasure is hedonistic and pleasure is of the body. So when you feel that kind of resistance in people, could you comment a little bit about where you think that comes from in us and our culture, and also how you combat that notion?
Yeah. So one of the primary, you know, this is a little off topic, but it definitely, I think it's very worth going after for your reasoning. One of the things that humanity has very strongly taken on is the belief of scarcity. And, you know, it's like, there's only so much. And so don't take too much. Don't be greedy. Don't be selfish. What do you think you're doing? You know, and so it's like, oh, you only get a little bit, or you can only have so much, and then you're just being selfish or greedy. And really, you know, even scientifically, it's so ironic that there's really no proof that the universe is scarce. Like, if you really look at the universe, it only produces abundance. And again, even scientifically, there's just constant abundance in the universe. So that was something that humanity took on and took on very strongly. And we've solidified it over and over and over again. And, you know, the interesting thing about scarcity is that's what breeds greed, not abundance. And, you know, selfishness and all of that. And so it is, it's just that same energy of like, well, you can't do that, otherwise you're greedy. But that's coming from scarcity mindset. So when you're in abundance mindset, you understand that there is more than enough for everybody. And that when we understand how to embody that ourselves, we actually help others to realize that and embody themselves. So it's actually an act of giving and most definitely not an act of taking or being selfish.
And how do you distinguish pleasure that is, let's say somebody's just eating donuts all the time, you know, from like, if I just want to, so towards Sam's point about definitions, like if you could expand even more on pleasure, because both Sam and I espouse many times on the show, people should do what they want to do, which is in the same exact vein here, as opposed to just doing things that they should do or, you know, beating their head against a brick wall. So if you could just expand on it.
Yeah, again, super great question. And this really comes back to like the origination of the desire, because we have desires that are innate, what I call them, and they're really from the heart, and they really light us up. Like when there's something that you truly desire to do or create, there you are lit and you are passionate deeply from the heart. And again, that's not something that a lot of people are even connected to in their life, because that's something we haven't allowed ourselves. And then we have things that are rooted in trauma. And we can feel like there's like a desire there, but it's actually a trauma response. So for instance, like just gorging yourself on donuts. The funny thing is I used to be a sugar addict. And now through the process of my own clearing of energies within my body and energetic clearing, like I only like a little bit and I love it. I love a little bit of like chocolate or something sweet, but it's perfect. I get like just what I need. I'm satiated. That's all I need. I don't need that excess. That excess is trying to fill that void and or comfort something within the nervous system that has been triggered and wants that comfort.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that qualified pleasure is so important. And I'm glad you expressed it that way, because it's always, again, that resistance people have to, well, if I was just pleasuring myself, it would be completely wanton hedonism and it would just be harmful and that would be irresponsible. But it's really, it has to be combined with that qualifier of conscious, coming from a conscious place, coming from a mindful place. What actually pleases you is in harmony with your body. It's in harmony with your environment. And you have to cultivate that. And I think that kind of pleasure is the ultimate landing zone, because it's coupled with that self-honesty, and which is so important for people to understand, I think.
Absolutely. And I always say, ask why. Like, why is such a tremendous question when you answer it very, very honestly with yourself? Why am I doing this?
Yeah. I imagine you could also just play it out over time. If somebody said, I want to eat donuts all the time. Okay, try it. Try it for a day, you know, and see how you feel at the end of the day. You're probably not going to want to eat donuts all the time.
Yeah, then you'd want to stop. You don't never want to eat a donut again.
Yeah. That's a really great point. Yeah, because pleasure that isn't rooted in that, it'll just continuously feel good or you won't desire it anymore.
Yeah. It have to be sustainable for it to be real. So
then when we talk a transition to performance as a definition, because my first instinct when I hear from performance to pleasure, it almost sounds like performance is kind of a place that we want to be leaving. But in a way, I feel like we should be able to harmonize both. So maybe you could start by giving your overall take on why would we want to move from performance to pleasure? And what is that definition of performance referring to?
Yeah, excellent. To me, when I utilize that term, what I mean is the, first off, the attachment to the outcome. And really this, this belief that we have to achieve in order to be of value, you know, that our value, our worth comes from outside of ourselves. And therefore, we have to keep going, we have to keep doing, we have to push ourselves through our own personal boundaries and moments where, hey, you know, I really need a break. I really need to relax. I got to get this done, because everything that says that I am valued is rooted in me achieving something, right? Versus when we're coming from pleasure, our natural genius gets activated. And that genius becomes who we are. And we just emanate that. And we become successful. So I am not at all against success and being our greatest expression of who we are. But more of that, like, I have to do this at all costs. And whatever that goal is, that's what I'm actually going after. Because the difference being, you know, the exterior perspective from the interior perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So it really isn't it's moving from not performing, but really performing in a different way.
Yes.
And or actually not acting in order to appear like you're performing, but moving from that to enjoying your life. And in a matter of result, performance happens, I suppose you could say, in the language we're using, which I like. Does that seem like an accurate reflection?
Absolutely. And again, the why, right? Like, why am I going after this? Well, because if I don't, you know, this happens, or I have to in order for this to happen, right? Why am I doing this? Because it lights me up. because I feel so much joy when I am pursuing this activity or this goal. Like, those are two completely different vibrations. And again, one is rooted in lack, scarcity mindset, and the other one is rooted in power.
What do you say to people who are afraid that if they go down this path, they'll lose their edge? Or, you know, it's often that people think that they'll lose what makes them successful.
Or they won't fit in societally anymore.
Well, that's a whole nother, another question itself.
I can definitely say I'm plenty edgy. I mean, there's no like lack of edginess here. And in fact, I would say you get edgier because you start to really understand what is power? Where is my power? Where is it rooted? Mm. And you become, you know, I'm not really a super fan of this label, but I'll use it here, unapologetic. But through compassion, I'm not all about being, you know, an asshole. Unapologetic by, you know, like I give myself permission 100% to pursue what lights me up. Right. And so, yeah, that to me is extremely edgy because we've not been raised in that kind of society.
I agree completely. Usually when people are just focused on performance, they've lost all sense of boundaries. And they don't even realize where things are rubbing right up in, against them in ways that they're totally unhappy with. So the second that they open this up, they start asserting boundaries, and not, it doesn't have to be even aggressive. It's just natural. Like, of course I don't want X in my life. Of course I want to pursue Y, and you don't have the right to stop me from doing so. You know, so I agree with that there's an edginess, a natural edginess, and it's not in conflict with the universe in any which way. It's actually is harmonious, because when people are pushing everyone's boundaries or making people work to the point of exhaustion, there's no, that's not a healthy dynamic for anybody.
Yes, yeah, super, super well put.
And what I'd like to know next then is, I feel, and maybe erroneously, but the context we're talking about has mostly been personal. A lot of times on business therapy, we try to focus on how do we bring this into business? And my first take is your occupation will become what gives you pleasure if you follow this mindset. And that's what I very much prescribe to. But if we were going to start with somebody who is in a job, and like you kind of talked about in your past, you have a more conventional life and you feel unfulfilled, what does that harmonizing of professional and personal look like in this pleasure conversation, seeking pleasure?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you bring it back to practical application. When I work with people who are in those kinds of circumstances, you know, we don't have to make it like black or white. You know, we don't have to say, okay, I'm going all in. I'm going for 100% pleasure. I mean, that's what I do, but we don't have to do that. So we can start to ask ourselves, where can I bring more pleasure into my life? And where can I start to really give myself permission? It will change your life. That's the thing about it. But if you do it in that context that feels safe, because that's really an important thing, right? That you feel safe in your environment and the life that you've created to be able to say yes in that permission manner, then it will start to embed itself within all of your physical reality, and your physical reality will react to a newer vibration of yourself. That includes in this, you know, this is hard sometimes for people to really understand, but I am going to say it. It includes your family, your coworkers, the company you work for. Ironically enough, you know, we are living, again, going to say some pretty intense things here, you know, in a multidimensional reality. And there are multidimensional versions of you, right? And when we start to shift our vibration, we literally shift into different timelines where our physical reality actually shows up differently. I've seen this time and time again with my own experience, where people like my family showed up completely different than they have in the past because I showed up differently. So we never want to underestimate that power.
Did you see Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I don't do it all the time. It's way too much.
No, the movie Everything
Everywhere. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So that seemed to be along the same line, but
it's subtle, because I really like the concept, and I don't think anything is too far out for the conversation we're having, and it's really just a for me, when I try to look at it analytically, when I shift my energy or I shift my vibration, people resonate to that, whether it's consciously or not. And like you said, sometimes if you come into presence and you're putting out such a strong, grounded energy pattern that wasn't the one you were putting out the last time people interacted with you, it is almost like your entire reality conforms around that. And they can feel it. Your environment can feel it. And I do think it's such a powerful thing to articulate. But like you said, even the fact that you had to qualify as this may sound far out, it kind of points to the fact that people have a really hard time understanding how their own energy and their own groundedness can affect the reality and even material reality around them. And part of it, I'm just articulating out loud because it's fascinating, but also it's just the challenge of this kind of work that I presume that you do, which is people are just so rooted in one view of reality. And how do you start to really break them away to chasing pleasure, even in small doses, to kind of step into this space where they can acknowledge that everything is not maybe what they think. I don't know how else to say it. Maybe you could just, I could just alley-oop that to you, because it's really talking about training people to see reality differently. It's all the challenge of, I think, this kind of work. And I'd be fascinated to see what your experience is there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm just really naturally good at it. One of the things I always say is our reality is a house of mirrors. We're just walking around in a house of mirrors. And I repeat that and people just immediately, you know, I purposely put a very clear intention to the people who come to work with me that they are ready, that they're ready to start to shift their mindset if they already haven't started already, you know? And so when I start to tell them and give them reflections of experiences that they had and how that was a direct reflection, they're like, wow, you know, I can totally see that. And because they'll come to me and talk to me about what happened at their work or what happened with their partner. And I just lay it all out because I can see all the different layers of energy there. And it's just super obvious when you're really shown how the reflection existed. And then they start to take that out and they start to see the reflection, and they'll see how one day they'll be in one energy and the reflection can be different, and, you know, vice versa. And just even also how they start to shift and how things start to show up differently for them, which solidifies that understanding.
Mm-hmm. Well, the number of unhealthy thoughts that people have or perceptions of the world must be incredibly high, because the number of people who go their entire life without asking why about any of the things that they're doing is high. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why you have people coming to you that they may not know all of this, but they certainly know that whatever they're doing doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would also impress too, and we're talking about this this theme of performance to pleasure, that a lot of the people who are coming, like you said, have probably hit a wall, or you've described they wake up one day and they have this epiphany. Some people hit rock bottom. Some people just have this pervasive feeling of not mm-hmm. feeling fulfilled or just lacking some sort of gusto in their life. And to me, I try to articulate, I feel it compelled to do it in this forum, at least, that it's not always this idea of you have to have that breaking point to start this work, to have this conversation. I mean, in some ways, if you think about the performance to pleasure motif, you can get to a certain part of your life with only performance and you can be successful by most common metrics. And really the next evolution of performance is integrating it with pleasure. It's not even really switching from one to the other or having to abandon one from the other, having to abandon everything you knew, but really knowing that you can only get to a certain point without honoring that desire to do what lights you up, to borrow your terminology, to make you feel engaged with life in a more passionate and wild kind of natural way. So I just think it's a conversation that we should all be starting, no matter where you are. You could be sitting there saying, oh, I'm totally happy and I don't need to question my family relationships and a lot of scary things that I don't really want to burn to the ground right now. But it's not about that. It's about finding alignment and knowing that no matter where you approach this conversation from, you should be expecting to come out the other side with everything you have in more abundance, everything you have amplified, I suppose.
Yeah, I love that you say that, because definitely people who have been in performance mindset, they are in a space to be able to shift into pleasure in that sense that they're just more, it's more available, you know, as far as like they have their life set up. And so it's just a natural movement. And And, you know, I think also what I was, you know, one of the things I want to reiterate is a lot of times people just, I can be talking about things I have nothing to do with. I mean, one of my clients, she reached out to me because I was talking about my alien family. I had nothing to do with the work that we were talking about. You know, it, they just felt called. And so my advice for people is to really like feel into that. You know, when you, sometimes we have this feeling like there's something that we need to be looking for. We have this intuition, even if we're not really clear on our intuition, what that is. And maybe you do listen to a podcast like this one and you're like, wow, there's something really to this. Even though, yeah, it doesn't mean that your life is a disaster or that you're unhappy in any way, shape, or form, but there's something to this. And that is that little seed that is really ready to blossom within you.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I really like the idea of just asking the why. So someone said with a performance mindset, like I have to X targets, you know, I have to make X success, or and you say why? And then at some point it's like, okay, I'll go my whole life, I'll hit these targets. And then like, I'll look back and what will I've had, you know? So it's, that's probably a very powerful, experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've used it a lot to reveal some very truths about myself.
Now, speaking of truths, I'd love to shift the conversation over to the fulfillment piece of it. Because I think fulfillment, well, that's a huge topic. So maybe we just start with how would you describe personal fulfillment or spiritual fulfillment or the whole thing? But I know that if people want to be fulfilled and people who are trying to perform, I think everyone to some extent would say they're trying to fulfill some goal or objective or emptiness or target in themselves. So what is fulfillment to you at this time in your journey?
Connection, and take it even a little bit deeper, intimacy. And, you know, we think of intimacy as sexual, and it absolutely is, but it's not only sexual. From my perspective, connection is really what we yearn so deeply for. And, you know, it's something that's known. Like when we're born, we have to have it. Otherwise, we actually have developmental issues. And it's not something that ever goes away. It's not like we just need it as a little kid and then we don't need it anymore. We need it all the time. And we often don't have it first and foremost with ourselves. And so what I do with people is I help them to reconnect to themselves. And like, what does that mean, right? Well, a lot of times we have really put ourselves into these false masks and false identities that we thought we needed to do. And this happens, it starts at a very, very young age. Usually I find it between 3 to 6 years of age, where whatever influence there was that who you are is not totally okay. We need to shift or alter you a little bit for you to be okay, to be a good, you know, good kid, to fit into society, whatever it was. And the people that I work with are highly, highly sexually powerful people, whether they're aware of it or not. And it's not important that they're aware of it. And usually that level of energy is really suppressed. And the majority of people also go through this. It's really suppressed at early, early ages. And again, I'm talking 3 to 6, where this first signs of this start to show up. And it's like, absolutely no, that's not safe. Like for me, it was, I was about 4 years old when an older boy molested me. And my parents were like, okay, this has to be cut off, shut down, not okay, you know? And so we've created this false identity, and then there's who we really are. We don't actually know who that person is. I mean, I have spent so many days, literally, I am not joking, on my knees, bawling, screaming, who am I? I just want to know who I really am. Because I felt that so strongly, and through my spiritual journey, it just became more and more revealed that I was carrying all these masks and all these identities that I really didn't want to partake in, but I couldn't find that part of me that I longed for so deeply. And when we start to let go of those identities and start to have that connection, first and foremost with ourselves, with our body, with our emotions, with our mind, with our spirituality, with our soul, and then, you know, with our sexuality, with our sexual organs, and then, you know, we really have this like intimacy with who we are deeply as an individual on a soul level, now we can really have connection with others, because connection and intimacy, it falters when we're really not connected with ourselves first and foremost. But it's not just intimacy and connection with other people. We become intimate and connected to our planet, to the rhythms, to her breath, to her heartbeat. Become connected to the moment, to its vibrancy, to the static electricity that is here, to the love that is available to us. We become connected to everything.
Can you stay a little bit on the topic of that, of what that disruption that occurs even from a very young age? And I know you specifically, or you primarily work with women. I have three daughters, and I've seen this play out with some of the messages that society, conflicting messages that are given. So can you speak specifically to the challenges that women have in this area?
Yeah. And I want to definitely say this goes for men too. I mean, I work with women, but yes.
100%.
I never like to leave the men out. You guys are just
100%. But it's just important. From my experience, I have seen, especially this dynamic that you're speaking to, present as a greater challenge.
Well, before she answers too, though, I would like to just reinforce Alara's point, Jonathan, to what you're saying, because I do believe it's underrepresented that men are also systemically sexually oppressed in this culture and just around the world. So I do
retract my question. Why do people have this challenge? I guess I'm just it was the parent in me coming out, but okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not just sexual. Of course it is sexual because, you know, our society is so crazy with regards to the conversations of sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking even just pleasure in general, you know, like
intimacy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And, you know, like children pleasuring themselves or even like having that curiosity, right? But even outside of sexual energy and sexual curiosity and all of that, it starts... It's so funny, you know, at 3 years of age, our emotional bodies really get activated. And we call it more of the terrible twos, right? But what happens when, you know, 2-3 years of age, kids start to have emotions? We're like, terrible twos is our label we stick on it, you know? And it's like, knock that off, stop, you're throwing a tantrum, you're misbehaving, you know? What are they doing? They're feeling. They're feeling really intensely. And usually what are they feeling? They're feeling their parents' emotions, that their parents are so shut down, they don't know how to express it. So the children are expressing it for them. It happens a lot in animals as well. But no, stop doing that. I'm uncomfortable with that because I'm not comfortable with emotions. So you need to stop. And that's just one of the many ways of suppression that we do to very young children.
Mm-hmm. Just when they're developing personalities, don't do that.
Absolutely.
It's much more complicated to deal with you when you're as an individual.
Yeah. Just sit there and shut up.
And this is such a profound theme because it starts there and it just never stops. It never stops in every level of our adolescence and every level of our early professional growth. There's nothing but a torrent of trying to conform to what's civilized, what's sociable, what's normal. And it really is it's a profound point about looking to children as teachers, because they have nothing but their instincts that guides their behavior, that every child mm-hmm. behaves that way. And we feel the need to break every child down into another mold is really it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Why are we feel compelled to behave that way? And I think, not to get too far off the topic of intimacy and fulfillment, but yeah, we are the ones culturally jeopardizing a lot of our natural instincts to express ourselves very early on. And I do think it's a very important part to acknowledge that our journey back toward being more intimate with ourselves in life starts with reducing the oppression of some of those natural tendencies.
And Alara, what do you see when people that you help people through this journey? Give some examples of what happens on the other side.
Yes. One of the things I love the most is they change physically. Many of them will lose weight and just become shapelier, and their face will change. And of course they will, you know, light up. And so that, and like, that's just like one of the, like the cherries on top. and, you know, of course they become extremely intuitive. and very clear and confident in their intuition. So they always have that inner guidance that they can trust and that they can follow. And, you know, most definitely their relationships really, really change in a really positive way. And there's, you know, humanity plays just so many psychological games with each other in relationships because of the disconnection. And so that just really, that goes out of their space, you know, whether that's with intimate partners, whether that's with friends, coworkers, even family, that stuff just gets wiped off the table. And sometimes that's really hard to believe. But like I said, like people just show up differently for you. And then they usually come into a lot of creation. I've had several clients just start writing books and finish writing those books and, you know, really end up in some creative nature. And then they have very radical life changes that they can't imagine going back to the way that they lived, you know, whether that is their career or not their career, but just the real, again, the why. Their why absolutely changes everything in their reality. So that, you know, it just becomes that flavor of real joy and fulfillment from them.
And what are some professional results? Not, you know, I hate even asking the question because separating professional from the person that like is inherently against our philosophy because it's one and the same. But just because listeners that are newer to this, you know, might be nervous about going down this path. What are some of those results?
Yeah. And I also wanted to say the ones who aren't, who are single often find partners. Yeah. One of the biggest things that comes through.
We should emphasize there. I was just going to say sold, you know.
That was a little voice I heard. What about the partners? Yeah. And like, you know, real partners. I use that word like a partner, right? Not just a lover. So for the professional side, I'd say one of the biggest things is clarity. So again, like you were saying, John, clarity of boundaries, right? And that pertains to, like, for instance, if they are an entrepreneur, that clarity comes through in the clarity of the client that they're really seeking coming through and the clarity of really that interaction between them. And really, you know, the clarity of, what do I want my business to look like? And having that absolutely show up. So I would say that the client and even, you know, the finances as well, if they're more of, you know, they're working in a career, not so much an entrepreneur, you know, it's again, clarity of relationships and clarity of their interactions are one of the biggest ones. You know, a lot of times clients come to me and they have just so much, there's so much distortion in their relationships and in corporate. And so as they go through this process, that clarity, they're able to express what needs to be said, and therefore they're more respected and they get the positions and the jobs that they desire because they're able to speak it and express it, even, you know, get, upgrades in their job. What's that word?
Promotion.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah. I think that point, and I want to double down on that point for a minute, because you talk about intimacy and connection as a bridge to fulfillment. And that's so heavily, I guess, discouraged in a typical corporate environment. So I'd like to talk more about that point you just made, which is that intimacy and that connection really with yourself is what allows you to be more honest. But how else would you encourage people who are in deeply entrenched in the corporate environment to be bringing more intimacy into their corporate work? Because I think it's possible. I think we should encourage it. I think a lot of times people think that's the antithesis of working in a typical corporate job. But do you have any comments or guidance for people who could create more intimacy with their professional connections, with their general corporate life?
Yeah, again, such a fantastic question. One of the things that I think creating intimacy with ourselves does for others is that we become highly much more empathic and compassionate, right? So when you are working with somebody, whether you are a leader or, you know, whether you're not a leader, you are able to really feel into people and understand where they're coming from emotionally and mentally. And that enables you to converse and relate to them so much more clearly than when you aren't aware. You know, like how often people say, like, I'm not really sure what that person is thinking or where they're coming from, right? Or what their intention is. When you create more intimacy, you can really feel people's intentions and you can really feel what they're needing or and or what their intention is. So your ability to respond and or your ability to set more clear boundaries, maybe because that needs to happen. Again, clarity just really increases because now you have information that you didn't have before. So on more of a tangible, like how do we achieve that? You know, it really is about like tuning into the other person, you know, tuning into your coworkers, realizing that they're human, that they have emotions, that they have feelings, that they have trauma and pain. I mean, everybody is just walking around with trauma and pain. And just, you know, anytime I find that we are frustrated or annoyed, you know, there's a reflection there for ourselves. And so sometimes we just need to take that breath and just really pause for a moment and tune into the other person. And, you know, the majority of the time, they're not saying something purposefully to trigger us or to get us angry or to annoy us, or, you know, that's just not really where they're coming from. And so the more times that, again, we can just really show up in that space and feel that other person or invite ourselves, even if you don't understand what that means, you can just say like, I really want to, what is Alara talking about? I really want to try this. Like, I'm going to set the intention to really try to connect with people. And guess what? Look them in the eye. Right? Especially the left eye. Here's a little trick. The right eye, we have a lot of, if you ever notice when you speak to people, you usually go to their nose and then you immediately go to their right eye. It's our natural human instinct. And actually dogs learn to do this with us. They learn to communicate in that exact manner because it's a human trait. And so therefore we tend to have a lot more masks over the left eye, energetic masks. If you tune into the left or the right eye, if you tune into the left eye, you bypass all of that because it's just much a more vulnerable side. And you can really like immediately tune into somebody and feel them. So people can just really set that intention and show up and see the other person as human.
Yeah, I imagine it's challenging to do that if you don't have that connection with yourself first, because then you're too involved in your own head about yourself and there's not much room to have any connection with anyone else at that point.
Absolutely. And you'll be triggered and caught up in your own energies. You know, that's really what it is. That's why I said it's, you know, the amount of projections and things, the distortion between, you know, two people, let alone a group of people or a corporation, you know, there's so much going on energetically there. And that's why the connection with ourself is so important.
Yeah. I think this is one of those moments in my life where I'm going to remember this guidance on looking into people's left eyes. And now you're going to be forever have changed my life. I'm going to have to go start trying that immediately. Yes. But back to the point of, I love how a lot of the talking points from this discussion are coalescing, but I'd like to share a little bit from my personal journey in the professional setting, because I do think when you talk about being able to be empathetic and setting your own boundaries, those in a way are the cornerstones to any relationship that we build. And I think it's really important to reflect on those things if you're trying to build a relationship with anyone. Because if you're so into yourself that you can't be empathetic, you can't understand the other person, and you can't also set the boundaries of a relationship so you don't get abused or taken advantage of inadvertently, it's going to be hard to have intimacy with anybody inside of work or outside of work. But this is where I'd like to share with the group that I actually ironically think it's easier to practice building intimacy at work than in your personal relationships. And just bear with me for a minute, because when I was doing this originally and I started to walk through a lot of, Alara, it sounds like a lot of the same journey you've been on, being able to be empathetic and to be vulnerable and to really connect with another person at work, it typically takes the physical aspect out of it, which can be a lot less intense. Like, I find it actually very easy in professional relationships to step in with a stranger, because I know there's not going to be any sort of expectation or unspoken or uncommunicated tension around physical intimacy, that I can actually be very vulnerable and I can be empathetic. I can try to attend to their needs professionally or personally within that work context. And I actually think it may sound very ironic, but it's probably a great place to practice this, because there's only a certain aspect of it that you have to contend with when you're trying to practice being there for another person and building a sustainable relationship. So I've found that to be something that I've practiced for myself. And it's even to this day, when I meet my wife's friends out and about, I find that way more intense than meeting a new colleague at work. So I just wanted to share that. And I thought it was germane to our conversation. I didn't know if you'd have any reflection about that.
I really love that because, yeah, there's more of a boundary there. And you get to like go home, all right, or move out of their space where like your wife, she's there, right? Like she's always there. I love that because there's a little bit more, I would say there's less channels, right, of interaction to work with. And so it's easier just to focus on a couple of channels and clarify those channels. Yeah, that's beautiful.
But likely you still have to be aware of that energy. So there's a difference between suppressing the energy at work because it's inappropriate but being aware that energy might exist, then it doesn't just cut off because we're at work. Like we're still the same person everywhere that we're going. So like there's healthy channels for all of our energy, but awareness of the energy always being there.
Yes.
And there's no part of intimacy.
Yeah. And there's no question there's not some physical aspect to workplace relationships, and there's not this proverbial workplace romance that's always there. If that's what you're referring to, I always just find that, yes, there could definitely be that aspect, but in a way, there is a lesser intensity or expectation to cultivate that in a work relationship than it would be maybe just meeting somebody on a first date or meeting a friend of a friend, for example. But I totally agree with what you were saying, Jonathan, if I understood you correctly, that yes, if you should always bring your whole self to every relationship.
Exactly. And the reality of whatever you're feeling is the reality. And so you can then you could address afterwards how you behave and what the boundaries are, et cetera. But it starts with being aware. So,
yeah, it's kind of, I guess what I'm really summarizing, I've never said it this way before, is in corporations, it actually kind of sets up, or at least it's supposed to set up, some artificial boundaries around physical intimacy, which can help people who have trouble maybe articulating their own physical boundaries, or they don't even know how to articulate them because they haven't really understood that level of themselves yet. Just something to toy with. I just think it's really fascinating, especially this idea that we should bring intimacy to work. That should be encouraged. And I think, Alara, if I'm understanding, that's a big part of your message. And I'm 100% a proponent of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I have to agree, you know, and, you know, I definitely was, you know, I thought I was, this is kind of to what you guys are saying with the relationships, but my own personal story, you know, I was like, oh, I'm good. You know, I'm good with this whole like connection thing and people, and I'm not really getting triggered. And then I got into a relationship and I was like, whoa, okay. I still got some stuff to work on. Right. Because it is much more intense in those personal relationships. At the same time, John, I agree with you. We shouldn't ignore it, you know. And I also want to say, you know, I want to be really clear on how we're using the word intimacy, because again, intimacy 100%. Is usually associated sexually, and mm-hmm. I am speaking about sexual intimacy with ourselves. But you know, I'm not at all saying we should go to work and be, you know, sexually intimate with everybody. It's more about the sexual intimacy with ourselves, and like, that is a deep, deep, deep connection. Like it really takes you into such a beautiful place when you have yourself. And the beauty of that is then you actually have much clearer boundaries when you go into a place like a work environment that you can bring intimacy. You can even bring sexual energy in a positive and grounded and aligned manner that is not going to send, you know, mixed signals, not going to be arbitrary. It's not going to be gray and shady. It's going to be very strong and clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe just simply, if you're authentic and honest, it breeds intimacy, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So intimacy and a lot of what we're talking about, I think that we could talk about that probably for days, but coming back to the topic of how intimacy, I guess you're positing, is the foundation for fulfillment. Do you have anything that you would add to finish that thought, at least especially for listeners who may be beginning their journey about really reflecting on fulfillment, understanding how to have more fulfillment in their lives?
Yeah, I want to, you know, one of the biggest things that we carry very strongly is, this is what comes up when you ask that question, is shame. And So to be able to recognize when we hold shame, when we feel shame, and kind of the less intense vibration of shame is guilt. Now, when we have those vibrations and really acknowledging that is such a clear pointer. Those two vibrations clearly point to what I was talking about, that part of yourself that you've denied. So anytime that we feel guilt and shame, we feel like, oh my God, I've done something wrong, right? I'm a bad person, or even like I'm disgusting and gross, right? And so again, that is a great pointer. Whenever we feel that, that's an opportunity to pause and really hold ourselves in acknowledgement and recognition, acknowledging and recognizing that we took that on as a little child when we thought that who we were was wrong.
Yeah. I'm pausing at the weight of that. It's another huge can of worms, I feel like.
Yeah, shame.
I have a good can of wormer.
Yeah.
Episode on shame.
For sure. Well, I think this has been a very expansive and a great conversation to this point. For any of our listeners, as we wrap up here, who want to reach out to you, do you have any recommendations you'd give in connecting with you if they feel called to work with you or seek guidance from you particularly?
Yeah, absolutely. They can email me at info@alarasage.com. And I also give my phone number, 720-600-7199. People can reach out and text me because I am really open to connection. And I also have very clear boundaries. So I have no problem with people reaching out because I really adore connection. And if people are feeling called, I definitely recommend it.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, before we close up, do you have any final comments or thoughts that you'd love for our listeners to hear from you?
Life is really meant to be pleasurable and, dare I say, orgasmic.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Alara, for coming on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, we always love to hear your engagement, your comments, and your questions. So please reach out. Otherwise, we'll be speaking with you next week on Business Therapy. Thank you.